Hey, it's John. Did you know a quick finger prick at home can unlock over 180 insights to slow aging and boost health? I tried True Diagnostics True Age plus True Health Test, and it gave me way more information than a regular checkup. True Health checks biomarkers like vitamins, gut health, inflammation, and toxins. True Age reveals your biological age, organ ages, and aging pace with tailored tips to optimize. My results? My body shows signs of being a few months younger than my actual age. Fitness age is 5 years below my actual age, with a strong grip and gait, but a slightly fast aging pace that I'm trying to tweak with better sleep and stress management. It's backed by Ivy League scientists. Just prick, mail, and get a clear report in 2 to 4 weeks. Serious about longevity? Visit TrueDiagnostic.com. Use code Harris for 20% off your order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com, code H-A-R-R-I-S. Your future self will thank you.
Nothing hurt in the way that that things did as the whole G3 thing unfolded with Josh and all that came out thereafter.
Welcome once again to the Conversations That Matter podcast. I'm your host, John Harris. We have a special guest today, Virgil Walker, who I don't know if he's actually been on the podcast. I'm trying to think. I know we've had conversations in the past. And of course, many of you who are in the audience probably know him from his Just Thinking podcast with Daryl Harrison during the social justice years. He was saying many of the same things I was saying about concern for where evangelicals were going at the time. But we're going to talk today a little bit about G3, maybe about Christian nationalism, where Virgil Walker is now, and I'm looking forward to it. If you want to find out more about Virgil Walker, you go to Virgil Walker Min, short for ministries.com. He is the teaching pastor at Redeemer Bible Church out in Arizona. And welcome to the podcast, Virgil.
Hey man, it's an honor to be on. This is a long time coming, John.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I met you and Daryl, I think it was in 2020, right before, like weeks before everything shut down. And the Shepherd's Conference was the last conference that year. Yep. And we just happened to be there. And I remember right after I think I met you, I sat down and someone at the table started saying there was a rumor someone was sick. And it was, 3 weeks later, of course, the world changed. Yep. But it's been a few years since then. And I think from a distance, I've seen what you've been up to. You've seen what I've been up to. And I just want to give you an opportunity with my audience to kind of explain your journey, where it's taken you, G3, people know what happened with Josh Bice and Steve Lawson, and kind of the future of evangelicalism.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it, John. First of all, man, I've been a fan of yours since that time. When I got to G3, I'm trying to remember if that was the conference. It was 2020. No, I wouldn't have been. I wasn't at G3 at the time. It was just thinking that had me there at ShepCon that year. And, had met you, had from that point began watching your content. It's been a blessing to me, to many over the course of the years. I was a pretty big fan. In fact, I was a voice inside of G3, man. Like we need to take a look at John and see what's going on and that kind of thing, because I really liked what you did. And there were others who would come along the way and mention your name and then things kind of progressed. I had kind of head down, focused on what was going on there, learning a brand new job and a brand new role, and what it meant to be at the time the director of operations for all of G3 Ministries, particularly as it relates to the conferences. Head down, focused, trying to get all that under my belt. First year in 21, doing that, and then following up in 22 with a number of different things. And then 23, we had the massive national conference that had 8,300 people. Prior to that, though, the whole Christian nationalism thing blew up.
That's
and,
right.
And I was just trying to really assess the lay of the land. I had some concerns. For all the charges of, hey, you don't know what you're talking about, or you hadn't studied or hadn't read. Actually, before all of us at G3 got together, we were tasked to read through Stephen Wolfe's book on Christian nationalism. I'd written an article about my concerns. All of the political ins and outs and all those issues weren't my focus. That was kind of more Scott and Josh. My focus and concern had more to do with what I thought was the ethnocentrism that had the potential to lend itself to kinism. And it did not seem that there were any mechanisms within Christian nationalism to deal with some of the outliers. And so I wrote about that, and you critiqued it. Others have as well. And I know initially I got accused of being woke, and I mean all kinds of things. And it was just a crazy time. Probably of all the times in ministry, that one hurt. Now that hurt was before the gut punch of what happened later with Josh Bice. But that one hurt because there were guys like yourself, like AD, who I felt like we were co-belligerents in the woke stuff. And so to hear guys who I respect and still do kind of come against me, that was like, man, you know, and for me, it wasn't just coming against me. I'm a complete loyalist. And so as they came and attacked G3, I was like, man, you're attacking my baby. You know, that's kind of how I felt at the time. It was what it was. I think we've learned a lot since then. There's some aspects of, and we've talked about this offline, there's some areas that I think we could refine as to how we approach the public square and could do a better job of that. We could talk about what specifically that looks mm-hmm. like. But, as it relates to the kind of the pain coming out of that, nothing hurt in the way that that things did as the whole G3 thing unfolded with Josh and all that came out thereafter.
Well, I want to get to Josh and maybe questions that I've heard share about what happened and how to warn other ministries from taking that. Cause that's the main takeaways. It's not to get into the dirty details. It is just, how do we prevent this happening in other places? But you mentioned the Christian nationalism debate, and I'll be honest, I don't remember everything I said. And right. So if there's,
I remember John,
I was going to say, you probably do. I try to be measured if I can, but sometimes I'm not. And this is what I do remember from that time. I don't think I ever called you guys woke if I remember correctly, but I did. I think I did though. I reviewed your article. I remember that. And my concern was, with the levels of immigration that we've been experiencing the last few years, we do need some kind of a nativist instinct to say we have an in-group preference here. And it's not that we don't care about the rest of the world, but we don't have that responsibility because the life raft is going to sink. And I thought Stephen Wolfe just trying to define a nation. And from my perspective, I know people differ with me on this. Stephen is more of a shared experience guy, which is what I am too. And I know he has defended the fact that there are people who are, well, let's just say, you know, not white people. There are people, and there's also different kinds of waves of immigrations of Europeans who have come here who have integrated in and have become part of the American story and are part of that shared experience. And they belong here. And so that's very much how he views it. He's not like an ethno-reductionist or biodeterminist or any words I've tried to use to make that line. And that's where I'm at. But I would agree with something you just said. And I wish I would have seen this a little more. You said there weren't mechanisms to stop it from going to places where it becomes so restrictive. And we're seeing that on X now, where you have guys who think, I really think they believe you take a DNA test and that's really the determining factor as to whether you belong in or outside of the United States. And that's the only thing. And I couldn't be more against that kind of thing because of the unique ways that the United States developed, but also the things that bind us together are more so shared experience. It's living together over time, creating arrangements, creating culture, the architecture and the music and the cuisine and just all of those things are it's a complicated matrix of things. It's like a family, and you can adopt people into a family, but they have to become part of the family and do the things the family does. And so anyway, I've been talking too long, but I think you and I, it sounds like we are sort of meeting in the middle more, or at least you're realizing, yes, we need to be active in the public square. There should be a sense of us and them, like we are Americans. And I'm also seeing some of what you just said, the lack of mechanisms to stop this from getting out of hand.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. I think you're spot on as it pertains to there's a culture that is American, right? And there are values that are American values. There are things that we do hold dear, and we don't need to be embarrassed by that or ashamed by that. I mean, when things have blown up as it relates to immigration right now. I voted for what's happening right now. I voted for the deportation of illegal immigrants, and anyone who's crossed the border illegally should be deported. I don't care what the idea that they've given so much money, they've worked here forever. That's you're an illegal. And as a result, you should go back to where you came. I do believe that there are cultural values that we should hold dear, and that they stem from the Christian ethos, and that we should not be ashamed of that or minimize that. I'm not a fan of multiculturalism. I believe that's been the tremendous detriment to us as a country. So I think there are things that we hold dear. I don't necessarily feel or believe that those things require a label or the creation of a new tribe. I just saw a lot of what was happening, at least initially, in the Christian nationalism movement. And again, this is not all. This is in some sense. I see it as a reaction to, you know, guys being told that they are racist, or that they're for thinking basic things that every one of us should believe as Americans. I was never for that. I fought against that. I stood against wokeism and the like. And so I was hopeful that more of those brothers would see me as an ally rather than an enemy. But again, hindsight's 20/20. You move forward, you press on. Since then, I've gotten people who've said crazy things about me reach out. And again, I've always been a fan of your work. I thought you were incredibly thoughtful. There were issues that you were even as it pertained to G3 that you watched from afar, that I thought, man, is Scott calling this guy? Like, how does he know all of this? And I thought you were incredibly spot on and gave some fair assessments and critiques of who we were and who I was and who we were at the time. So I'm always open for critique. I'm not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, and G3 definitely was not. I think there's a way in which you can go about that that's helpful and beneficial. I felt like most of the rhetoric we saw during that time was not. It was more grandstanding and juvenile. But I digress. I've talked too long now. So
yeah, no, you haven't. No, this is. I wanted people to hear what you're saying and get sort of the inside backstory here too, because to bridge the gap between that Christian nationalism stuff and what happened with Josh Bice. Behind the scenes, and I don't think I messaged you, but I did message Josh and I did message Scott, and I was trying to get to broker a piece, or at least a platform for people to come and talk about that. It because I knew the temperature needed to come down, and I felt like, at least with Steven, people were misreading him, and this is, I'll just say this, Virgil, this is something I have watched. I'm not accusing Steven of this. I just know that there's a dynamic I've seen watching the right for many years. You get a guy, I'm trying to give a good example of this. One will probably come to my head in a moment, but there's been several. You get a guy who goes outside the pack slightly and says something that's true, but it's not on point. It's not the liberal talking points that everyone's supposed to remain within. And he watches himself get rejected by the rest of whom he thought were friends. And he right. thinks, I'm saying something that's true, though. Things like, okay, crime statistics, right? Hey, look at these minority groups, and they commit higher crimes. And then he'll see himself kind of, everyone slowly backs off of him.
Sure.
Anyway, the people who embrace him tend to be those who have already been rejected. And they tend to be sometimes crazies, or if they're not crazy, they have nefarious intentions, and they will get that person on the road to very dark places at times. Yeah. And I've seen this happen before. With guys who just said, you know, things that were basic. I don't know why example is escaping me, but I feel like one's going to come to my head in a moment, and I'll be able to be like that guy right there.
Well, let me jump.
Go ahead. Do you have one?
Yeah, let me. Well, not an example, but just simply to say I agree with you. But I'm one of those guys who, man, since most folks know me from A Just Thinking and you know 2017 and our conversation, I've always, not just since that time, but all my life, believe that white guys telling the truth need to tell the truth. Like I don't care what if you're looking at crime statistics, for example, to take your example, and you see that black people commit more crimes, you should be saying that. You shouldn't back down from that. You shouldn't be concerned or nervous because someone's going to call you a racist. Like that's stupid. If that's the reality, then we've got to speak about reality. and be honest and direct about those things. And so for me, I'm like, no, I've always been a fan of truth telling. And so I would never shame someone for saying what they believed about a thing, even if it were some of the more nefarious and those with nefarious intentions. I want to hear them. I want to hear them say what they say, because opening that up allows me to know who the crazies actually are. And what they're thinking. So I would never want to squelch or quiet down or mute those kinds of voices. I may disagree, and where I do, I'll be clear, like I did in the piece that I wrote. But I don't think we need less of that. I think we need more.
Yeah. An example just came to my head, kind of. Yeah. So like Pat Buchanan, I think he's a very measured guy, and I don't think he took the bait on any of this. Like he just kept his convictions. But I know the people who, when he got dumped, the people who were interested in hearing what he had to say, his crowd shifted. Same with Sam Francis. Even what's his name? Richard Spencer. You remember Richard Spencer from like 2015? I didn't realize that this until maybe 2 years ago, that he was in some sort of more mainstreamish paleocon circles. Hmm. And then he started saying things, and I don't know exactly what the first step was, but he eventually got to a place that was with a bunch of neo-Nazis and so forth. And it's like, you know, how did he go from being with just, you know, basic Paul Gottfried run-of-the-mill paleocons to this crowd?
Right.
And anyway, that was one of the things that I think I should have seen that a little more as a possibility with some, and I'm not saying all, but some in the CN crowd, that sure, if they're rejected by the people they expect to support them, or if they feel a rejection,
yes,
they're going to see the open arms of others who will, yes, embrace them. And maybe that was one thing in the back of my mind, I don't know, that I was trying to do with trying to get Josh and Steven to maybe come on a show, or
no,
I was like, it doesn't have to be my show. Do something. Talk.
No, I'm with you. We were yeah, receiving. So to jump into kind of what was happening there, we were receiving all kinds of calls, and I, you know, we saw a lot of this from a standpoint of guys trying to, what's the next outrageous thing I can say to grow followers, right? Like they, you know, just wake up. Okay, this is the most outrageous thing I can say today. So let me post that and with conviction and grow a group of followers. And so our thought was, you know, we don't have relationships with many of these guys, and so now all of them want to come and have these quote unquote conversations. And again, whether it was kind of some of the things that surrounded Josh that we could talk about, or just wisdom, we just thought, you know what, let's back out of all of that. Let's dial all of that back. Let's kind of, and in fact, Josh even said, hey, let's not even get into it online. I was slated to write not one, but two. Like I think Scott wrote two or three articles about Christian nationalism. I know Josh wrote two or three. I was slated to write two more, but by the time mine came out, and my direction was totally different. By the time mine came out, Josh and Scott and others just thought, you know what, it's not worth it. So I refrained from writing anything else about right, CN, and just kind of doubt it.
Well, everything cemented, right? The two sides cemented. And you said something interesting, and I suspected this. So it sounds like Josh more or less was the one who said, we're not going to, we're going to engage this, but we're not going to do it like a dialogue with those people. We're just going to analyze them and critique them from our platform. Yeah,
it wasn't you in particular, or because I read every email where you sent and said, hey, let's reach out, let's talk, let's connect. But there was a thought that talking was, the two sides were talking past one another during that time. So yeah, just from a standpoint of context, like, and there were so many definitions of Christian nationalism that right, you could be attacking. I could be addressing Stephen Wolfe's version, but now I'm missing Joel Webben's version. And now I'm missing, you know,
right, I'm missing Doug Wilson's version
or some. Right. So the thought is we're going to be made to look like the village idiots, you know, because we don't know this person's version or nuance of, so talking about what, like, if I were going to talk about Mormonism, right, there's a standard by which Mormons operate. There's core convictions. There's written material that I can anchor a conversation in. Whereas with Christian nationalism, and the goal of many was just how can I get you've watched those Charlie Kirk events where they have 21 Democrats, yeah, and me, or 21.
Oh, well, I yeah. I hate those kind of, because it's like not great communication.
No, it's horrible. And that's what, and again, this is before the time, but that's what we're envisioning. We're thinking we're gonna be in a situation where the goal of the person that's on the feed is simply to get a viral moment that they can, I checked Josh Beisch, or I checked Scott, or I checked that G3 bunch. And then they've got a video clip that they're running ad nauseum to tell you now to come to their conference because they're the leading voice on X, Y, or Z. And so, I mean, why engage?
I can understand that. I think for me, so I was told by Josh essentially that I was a liar, that I had slandered G3. And I wasn't participating in these memes or some of the stuff that was going on X, that some of it I did think was going too far and it was just bringing the temperature up. But Josh, when he said that to me, when it was like there was a hard no, we're not going to have this conversation, even having the conversation to have the conversation, right? I couldn't even make it through the front door of like, what would that look like to have a constructive thing? Maybe it would just be Steven and Josh, right? Or maybe it would just be, I don't even that time Moscow was involved. So like Doug Wilson and Josh or something, like couldn't even have the conversation and then accused of lying. I was like, at that moment, I think I chose a side. I was like, okay, buddy, like you're bringing this on yourself. And so when Josh, I think you said that I had some perspective on Josh and you're like, how did I know? I didn't know. I had very limited interactions, but the few that I did have with Josh, that was one of them. Yeah. I got very bad feeling from him. I just thought this man is not after the unity of the body. I think he's after his own ministry and platform building. I got that sense from him. Some of it's just a feeling, I suppose, but some of it was his lack of warmth to me. And then I'd ask others and I'd say, because I met him at the same conference I met you and Virgil, you and Daryl, were just very
black guy though. I'm just saying. I mean,
I mean, they all look the same to me. No, I'm just kidding. There's a guy from Africa who used to tell me that a good friend of mine from, he'd say, all you white guys, I get you confused. You all look the same. So you and Daryl though were so warm to me at that conference. And it was the same day I remember I met Josh, and I appreciated him because he was saying things against the Kellerites and even the Deverites. And so he was saying no to those things, divided by faith, no. And so I went up to him. I was with my dad, and my dad's a pastor who's a TMS graduate. Actually, not a lot of people there know him. He's not like a big name, but he's very well known with kind of the old school guys. And I was trying to introduce them, and Josh was so cold to me. I just thought, well, that's kind of a weird move to make. That's like I don't know if I was a pariah. I still don't know exactly what happened there, but he seemed very interested, because I'd ask other people, is that just who he is? And they're always very warm to me. And I'm like, I don't get it then. And I think experiences like that made me question. And then when everything went down, I was like, okay, this makes sense then. I didn't benefit him. I wasn't someone who could benefit his platform. In fact, maybe giving me the cold shoulder benefited him more with who he was trying to curtail an audience with. So anyway, I'll let you talk. What explain this to us, because a lot of the people in my audience love G3. In fact, I've loved G3 up until the CN thing. I've been to G3, at least the pre-conference. And I saw potential there with expository preaching as a big platform with Ligonier, with R.C. Sproul dying, with John MacArthur now, he's dead. I thought G3 was sort of the next expository preaching platform. And now, I don't know, it just seems like that it's not going to revive. So how did you go from 8,500 people to now
8,300 with a goal? I mean, I had kind of a goal of I wanted to see 10,000 in this year. I mean, this September. So that was kind of my thrust and my focus, and just driving in that direction. And we saw the impact of the CN debate. We saw the impact of some of the things that you mentioned. And I think from a spiritual standpoint, without trying to sound too mystical, there were reasons why numbers weren't gelling in the way that they had previously. You spoke about, I heard you tell that story. I watched the episode where you told the story about your interaction with Josh. I can't speak to that directly. I don't know. And in fact, I want to say if it was 2020, I wasn't even at G3 at that time. If it was the 2023 ShepCon or
it was Shepherd's Conference.
It was Shepherd's Conference. I'm sorry. Yeah. So I don't know. I I never got, I did sense whenever I talked with him, there was a rift between the two of you, and I had no idea what, and no one ever explained it. Because I thought, man, I love John's work. I'd love to interact with him. He's doing some things that would be beneficial. And I'd benefited in that, you know, we had the Just Thinking podcast. I was a podcaster. I've got theological education and a degree and all of that, but I was just a podcaster that folks liked, and Josh opened the door through G3 for Daryl and me to be on platform there. So I'm thinking, hey, if this is a part of the process or mechanism, you know, John's got, you know, credentials. He's got theological education. His stuff is sound, you know. So anyway, I don't know. I can't speak to that specifically. That's one of the things that was disappointing. And at times, to be honest with you, a little bit frustrating when there would be a person or a ministry and no, that's not the deal. And I would spend a lot of time relational equity, both with Josh and with the people that I was connected with, to try to bridge the gap. My role eventually went from operations director to vice president of ministry relations. So part of my role was to connect with other ministries of like mind and kind, and see what we could do to be a mutual benefit to one another. And so to learn later that was being undermined behind the scenes on social media accounts was just, it was a gut punch. I mean, it was a massive gut punch. And I'll say this as well, for me as well, you know, Josh is someone who I love. I still love to this day. I hate what happened. I hate what transpired. But this is a guy who, you know, if harm came his way, I'd step in the middle of it, between it, without hesitation. That was my level of loyalty. So to find out what transpired and what happened, brother, you could have taken my heart out of my chest, put it on the ground, and stomped on it.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. What happen exactly, though? Because I've had people reach out that say, "Well, hey, I was a classmate with Josh, and none of this surprises me. I never thought he was a." I mean, that happens every time one of these things, and you're like, "Well, where were you?" I don't.
Right. Everybody's a prophet. Right.
Everyone knows. Yeah, I always know. But I didn't know it was to this extent. I didn't know he was living a lie for years, lying. It sounds like to his church. Lying to people like yourself. I think one of you had mentioned, maybe it was Scott, that you had even asked him about this. Like, are these accounts yours? And he denied it. I mean, when did the suspicion start, I suppose? I mean, you're like, wait, something's not right here.
I'll be honest with you. I was blind. I never had a suspicion of what actually happened. I know as I watched the story unfold, there's no way they could have not known. I don't know that Lawson's wife knew what was happening with Lawson. So, you know, there you have that. But, you know, I had no inclination. I remember having conversations around the office, like, man, with what's going on with CN, with all these anons, man, wouldn't it be fantastic? Like, if we had a team of that, so we could walk away and not pay attention to it and let somebody else fight the battle for us. I mean, it's kind of a running joke. And you used to leave the room and, you know, go back to work. And for me, I just kept my head down. I'm a very much stay in my lane kind of guy. I've got work to do, a lot of it, and don't have time to pay attention to crazy chaos. And so I kind of did that. Lo and behold, you know, we would come to find out and learn that he kind of had taken that seriously. And it sounded like, based upon what the elders found, that it went back a number of years, which is, again, as there came a point at which, John, I didn't want to hear about it anymore, because the level of heartbreak was exponential with every layer of the news that would hit. And so let me say this, I'm not a victim. Okay. So I'm not trying to portray myself in that light in any way. In fact, what I've come to learn is, man, there are a lot of people who are engaged in ministry who have ministry hurt, like, right, church hurt, and have dealt with sin. And that's kind of the nature of it. It is what it is. You press on, move forward. I'm grateful for the opportunities that I have now, and where I am now, and kind of what I'm doing now. Mm-hmm. But none of that to say that I was some victim. But to answer your question directly, you know, there were people who had kind of like, man, this sounds a lot like Josh, or this sounds a lot like, you know, this person. But none of us, you assume the best. And so you don't go in thinking, yeah, this guy's doing something, or, you know, I looked up to Josh. Think about where I came from. I came from this, you know, I was at a church in the Midwest in Omaha, Nebraska. I was an associate pastor of discipleship there. I look at G3 as like, man, these are the guys, like these are the men, like I've been influenced by them since 2017. And so I'm there, and there are things that would happen that I would question. But my thought is, this is just how ministry is done at this level. Like, I'm not swimming in circles where I see Vody Bakum all the time, or I run into, Paul Washer calls on the phone and asks for a favor, or, you know, any of these guys, or getting to be in the room with Dr. John MacArthur. So anything that you told me from the vantage point that I sat was new news. And I'm like, oh, this is what protocol looks like in this space. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't a deal where I went, yeah, that's kind of weird. Or this is kind of weird. Or, you know, that kind of thing. It's not that my thought was, I'm here. I'm a soldier, head down. Let me get busy doing what I need to do to make things work.
Well, what have you learned as far as personal lessons? And then what do you think other people should learn about ministry at these higher levels?
Yeah. For me, I've learned of the importance of personal sanctification. Anytime I hear one of these issues, one of these situations that happen or transpire, whether it's a law sin or somebody else or some other sin that's happened, I immediately grab a mirror and examine my own life and heart. And so I think, man, if it's not for God's grace, that's me. And then I try to examine in what ways am I steps down that road? And how can I course correct? So all of the analysis that people do online about, issues that they're so far removed from, they have no idea what they're talking about, but yet they pontificate as if they've seen it all and know it all and that kind of thing. I do the opposite. I'm like, man, what sin in my life do I need to examine and heart do I need to examine to make sure that I'm not doing the wrong thing? And then too, the other thing is, man, it's the disconnect has afforded me the opportunity for things like this, where I can get a chance to talk to guys I admire and whose work I've appreciated, like yourself and others. I just did an interview with the guys down at Apologia, since I'm here in Phoenix, and I'm looking forward to doing a lot more things. I think you're going to see, I'll be at the Fight Laugh Feast event that's coming up. And so it's afforded me the opportunity to be in more spaces and places of people that I love without all the drama. Oh, you can't say this, or you can say this, or you better not go with these guys. Or, you know, 5 years ago, they did a podcast on X, Y, or Z. So you shouldn't, I don't have to do that anymore. So there's freedom in that. And I'm looking forward to it. But I've learned a lot. I'm still walking through a process of healing, to be honest with you. And where I'm at here in Gilbert, Arizona, in Phoenix with Redeemer, it's a wonderful opportunity to do just that while I still engage in ministry on a level.
I have a question. This is for me personally as well. I've gone through a similar thing where I have thought one thing about someone and then realized that they were being deceptive, or I missed something big. And then it also causes the same reaction. I don't want in my heart to become a platform builder where I will sacrifice time, truth, things that God's given me to manage, my family, my own local church, in order to get followers, right? This is a temptation. Mm-hmm. You were on a level, or at least you were rubbing shoulders with guys who were on a level where they had so many followers that they didn't know personally that were out there. And, I wonder with you whether or not this has created a sense of like a discernment between who the authentic guys who are in it for spiritually right motives, who actually know God and walk with God, and then those who are showmen. Because if we can figure that out, I feel like a lot of the latest scandals would have been, we wouldn't have gone through them. But it's hard when it's on a podcast. It's hard when you don't see the person. But you were up close and personal with some of these guys. Yeah. Have you realized things that maybe you should have said, oh, that's a red flag? I didn't see that at the time.
Absolutely. I mean, having been the guy that orchestrates the green room, right? So I has to navigate bringing these speakers in and all of their people that they need to have in order to make that happen, and people that you interact with. They're what I come away with, John, is this, man. This guy is the real deal. Right. That guy is the real deal. This ministry is serious about what it is they do. And then there are some who aren't so serious. And my goal is not simply to, let me give you the list of who those people are. Let me make sure that I'm examining my own heart, man, to make sure that I'm not that guy. Let me make sure that I'm not so caught up with opportunities to go speak and opportunities to write and to be a voice in certain spaces and places that I don't get caught up where I'm buying my own press. I maintain some humility, recognize I am a dreadful sinner who needs a savior, who needs the gospel preached to him regularly, who needs to be in a church, who needs the Lord. And that when I interact with other people, that they get the impression that, hey, that guy, not perfect, but he's definitely trying to walk in the right direction.
Well, let me make this the last question, because I know you got a hard break. And if people have other questions, we could always have you on again. But here's what let's end it on a high note. Here's what I'd like you to talk about. What's the future look like for Virgil Walker, first of all, but then also for all the people who are interested in expository preaching and solid theology who are going to G3? They don't have a lot of places to go. Where do you see the future of expository preaching and solid theology in the United States?
Yeah. Wow. That's a big question. Big note to end on. I would say for me, and I'm at a stage in my life. My kids are out of the house. It's me and my wife. We've moved down here. This is the first kind of space and place where we've moved, where it's just us. And so to be honest with you, John, I'm so enjoying what it means to love my wife well, what it means for us to rekindle being just us. We've raised kids and all of that. And so waking up to her face and to our space and to a new experience is something that I thoroughly am enjoying right now. It's an opportunity to slow down just a bit because I was engaged in at G3 it was a lot of a lot of moving parts, a lot of things. That's not, I'm not a guy who's idle. So I won't be sitting on my laurels. I will look for the right opportunities where I think my voice it would be helpful in the culture. I'll continue to do that. I'll continue to partner with people. And one of the goals that I have is I want to use all of what I learned at G3 through that process to help other ministries that are doing good work. As far as trying to identify who those people are, I think you've got to use proper discernment. You've got to think about people who, you know, do they just have a platform, or are they shepherding their church well, right? Do they just have a platform, or are their sermons aimed at the podcast audience that they're trying to gather attention to, or are they shepherding souls? And then who's around them from a standpoint of a level of accountability that can speak truth to them? Like who is that person? You know, next door, I'm in an office where Daryl is right next door to me. And I get a chance to, you know, see him see me. That's the first time that's ever happened in the 8 years that we've been together. But we speak some real honest truths to one another. And he has been a brother that's been through some incredibly difficult times, both professionally, but as it pertains to ministry, as well as personally with my kids and the raising of them. I've got guys like that in my life who will be honest with me. And then the greater guys here at the church who I've had a long-term relationship with here at Redeemer, you know, the John Benzingers, the Dale Thackeras, you know, Kyle Swansons, who I've had a long-term relationship with, who I trust, who speak into my life and who've shepherded me even from afar. And it's been a blessing. I'd be remiss not to say, you know, even the men at Praise Mill, the elders there, they've been incredibly, incredibly gracious and still stay in contact with me today to make sure that, you know, hey, you doing okay? You need anything? How can we be praying for you? Those kinds of things.
Yeah, that's good. I don't know if we even know the name of a ministry, if there will be one that will capitalize on this. And maybe that's the way it needs to be. Maybe it does need to be faithful local churches doing smaller events and just ministering to the people in the community there.
Absolutely.
And there's something very healthy about that. But I know you got to go. Virgil, thank you for your time. And I appreciate your transparency. I pray the best for you and your wife as you move forward in this new ministry. If people want to find out more, virgilwalkermin.com is where they can go to find your blog and all
That. So. Hey, one last thing. You gave me a shout out. I was so proud that I made your shout out list with the work that I'd done about MLK. I was like, oh man, John liked my MLK work. You had talked
oh,
about
yes.
You had talked about it. And that of all the things that I've done, specifically the things I've written, that's probably gotten the most traction. I've had more people stop me and say that's been a big deal for them and helping them see. I have eyes wide open to who MLK was and the like. So anyway, John, I appreciate what we can have for a long time. Want to say that in front of your audience and man, just thanks for having me on. I hope it won't be the last time.
Yeah, my pleasure, brother. Well, God bless. Enjoy the rest of your day.